We shall read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 18. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kirata,
Kirata,
Huna,
Huna,
Andhra,
Andhra,
Pulinda,
Pulinda,
Pokasha,
Pokasha,
Abira,
Abira,
Shumba,
Shumba,
Yavana,
Yavana,
Kasha,
Kasha,
Adaya, Ye, Anye, Cha, Papa, Yat, Apashraya, Ashraya, Shudyanti, Tasmai, Prabhavishnave, Namaha. Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pukasha. Abira Sumba Yavana Kashadaya. Yenye cha papa yadapa shraya shraya. Shudyanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. Kirata hunandra pulinda pukasha. Abira Shumba Yavana Kashadaya. Yenye cha papa yadapa shraya shraya. Shudyanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. Kirata, a province of old Bharata. Huna, part of Germany and Russia. Andhra, a province of southern India. Pulinda, the Greeks. Pokasha, another province. Yavana, the Turks. Kasha Adaya, the Mongolian province. Yea, even those. Anye, others. Cha, also. Papa, addicted to sinful acts. Yet, whose? Apashraya, Ashraya, having taken shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Shudyanti, at once purified. Tasmai unto him. Prabhavishnave unto the powerful Vishnu. Namaha. My respectful obeisances. Translation. Kirata, Huna, Andhra, Pulinda, Pokasha, Abira, Shumba, Yavana, members of the Khasa races, and even others addicted to sinful acts, can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord due to His, the Lord's, being the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The first part of the purport describes the different categories of people mentioned in the verse, and mainly with reference to the Mahabharata. But to save time, I won't read in detail about each category, but just a sentence or two. Kirata, a province of old Bharatvarsha. Generally, the Kiratas are known as the aboriginal tribes of India. Huna, the area of East Germany and part of Russia is known as the province of the Hunas. Andhra, a province in southern India mentioned in the Bhishma Parva of Mahabharata. It is still extant under the same name. Pulinda, the Greeks are known as Pulindas, and it is mentioned in the Vana Parva of Mahabharata that the non-Vedic race of this part of the world would rule over the world. Abira, in the Mahabharata, it is mentioned that this province was situated on the river Saraswati in Sindh. The modern Sindh province formerly extended on the other side of the Arabian Sea, and all the inhabitants of that province were known as the Abiras. Sumbas, or Kankas, the inhabitants of the Kanka province of old Bharat, mentioned in the Mahabharata. Yavanas. Yavana was the name of one of the sons of Maharaj Yayati, who was given the part of the world known as Turkey to rule. Therefore, the Turks are Yavanas, due to being descendants of Maharaj Yavana. The Yavanas were therefore Kshatriyas, and later on, by giving up the Brahminical culture, they became Mlecha Yavanas. Kasha, the inhabitants of the Kasha Desh are mentioned in the Mahabharata. Those who have a stunted growth of hair on the upper lip are generally called Kashas. As such, the Kashas are the Mongolians, the Chinese, and others who are so designated. The above mentioned historical names are different nations of the world. Even those who are constantly engaged in sinful acts are all corrigible to the standard of perfect human beings if now, if you were listening to the verse, you would know how to complete the sentence. So I will begin the sentence again, and then you tell me how the sentence is completed. Even those who are constantly engaged in sinful acts are all corrigible to the standard of perfect beings if yes, they take shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Jesus Christ and Muhammad, two powerful devotees of the Lord, have done tremendous service on behalf of the Lord on the surface of the globe. And from the version of Srila Shukadev Goswami, it appears that instead of running a godless civilization in the present context of the world situation, if the leadership of world affairs is entrusted to the devotees of the Lord, for which a worldwide organization under the name and style of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has already been started, then by the grace of the Almighty Lord, there can be a thorough change of heart in human beings all over the world. Because the devotees of the Lord are able authorities to effect such a change by purifying the dust-worn minds of the people in general. Some years ago, our godbrother Pradyumna Das, who was Srila Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor, was invited to attend the Prabhupada Festival in Los Angeles over the Memorial Day weekend. And afterwards, he came and spent a couple of days with me in Santa Barbara. And Pradyumna Prabhu had studied so many books. In fact, Prabhupada affectionately called him Panditji, because he knew Sanskrit and Bengali and had read so many books, commentaries on scriptures and books by previous acharyas. And he said that what struck him about Srila Prabhupada, which seemed to distinguish Srila Prabhupada from all the others whom he read, of course there are other distinguishing factors as well, but what he mentioned at the time was that Srila Prabhupada applied the principles of scripture beyond the individual practitioner's efforts to advance spiritually and become self-realized, to the affairs of state. He applied the same principles on a grand scale, and we see it immediately in the purport. The verse says that anyone who is sinful, OK, can at once be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. So that is very encouraging to us, sinful souls, that by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, we can become purified up to the standard of perfect human beings. But Srila Prabhupada is taking the principle and expanding it, that the whole world is suffering because people are sinful. People are suffering because they're sinful. In fact, all suffering is due to sin. The reason we suffer is because we've committed sinful acts. Sin is due to ignorance. So if we become free from ignorance, we will become free from sin, and we will become free from suffering. And that can be achieved by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Now, everyone is under the protection or shelter, I mean pretty much everyone, is under the protection or shelter of some government. So if the government are devotees of the Lord, then the people can be purified. The sinful people can be purified, and then all the problems will be solved. There will be no more sinful activities, so there will be no more sinful reactions. There will be no more misery. People will be happy. Prabhupada continues. The politicians of the world may remain in their respective positions because the pure devotees of the Lord are not interested in political leadership or diplomatic implications. The devotees are interested only in seeing that the people in general are not misguided by political propaganda, and in seeing that the valuable life of a human being is not spoiled in following a type of civilization which is ultimately doomed. So, devotees are not interested in occupying any political position of rulership, but they are concerned that the sinful population of the world should be purified. And that can be achieved if the political rulers take guidance from the devotees. It's the same principle of being purified by taking shelter of the devotees. And the political leaders themselves need to take shelter of the devotees, and if they do, they'll be purified, and then they'll be able to rule properly. And all the praja, all the citizens, will also become purified, and everyone will be happy. As opposed to the present situation, which is godless and full of false propaganda. If the politicians, therefore, would be guided by the good counsel of the devotees, then certainly there would be a great change in the world situation. By the purifying propaganda of the devotees, as shown by Lord Chaitanya. As Shukadeva Goswami began his prayer by discussing the word yat kirtanam. So also Lord Chaitanya recommended that simply by glorifying the Lord's holy name, a tremendous change of heart can take place, by which the complete misunderstanding between the human nations created by politicians can at once be extinguished. So in the prayers of Shukadeva Goswami, which we are reading, he says, Ya Kirtanam, Kirtan. And Lord Chaitanya said the same thing, Kirtaniya Sadahari, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So again, one may think of the verses of the Shikshastika in a very personal way, in terms of one's own spiritual advancement. But here, Srila Prabhupada is extending the principle that if the government leaders propagate kirtan, Harinam Sankirtan, then all of the benefits mentioned in the first verse of the Shikshastika, such as Bhava Mahada Vagni Nirvapanam, the extinguishing the blazing fire of material existence, which, yes, it exists in the level of the individual and the family, but it also exists in the level of nations. So on every level, people can be delivered from the blazing fire of material existence by Sankirtan. Sankirtan. Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. What you said is not wrong, because the devotees of the Lord will teach you to perform kirtan. But in the context of the discussion of Shikshastika, it is by Sankirtan. As Shukadeva Goswami began his prayer by discussing the word yat kirtanam, so also Lord Chaitanya recommended that simply by glorifying the Lord's holy name, a tremendous change of heart can take place. Chaito darpano marjanam. The mirror of the mind will be cleansed. A tremendous change of heart can take place by which the complete misunderstanding between the human nations created by politicians can at once be extinguished. And after the extinction of the fire of misunderstanding, other prophets will follow, as mentioned in the Shikshastika. The destination is to go back home, back to Godhead, as we have several times discussed in these pages. According to the cult of devotion, generally known as the Vaishnav cult, there is no bar against anyone's advancing in the matter of God realization. A Vaishnav is powerful enough to turn into a Vaishnav even the Kirata, etc., as above mentioned. That was certainly the case of Srila Prabhupada. He was so powerful that he could convert into Vaishnavas people of all different categories.
of sinful population. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:32, it is said by the Lord that there is no bar to becoming a devotee of the Lord, even for those who are low-born, or women, sudras, or vaishyas. And by becoming a devotee, everyone is eligible to return home back to Godhead. The only qualification is that one takes shelter of a pure devotee of the Lord, who has thorough knowledge in the transcendental science of Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. One time in Juhu, Bombay, Srila Prabhupada's disciple Tamal Krishna Goswami had a hernia and had gone to Jaslok Hospital, which was considered the best in Bombay at the time, to have an operation. But when Srila Prabhupada found out, he wanted to stop the operation because he felt that Tamal Krishna Goswami could get better medical treatment in America. He didn't have too much faith in the treatment in India. But in those days, we didn't have a phone in Juhu. I mean, India has changed a lot. I remember when we first came to India, Srila Prabhupada said that if you don't want to wait 10 years to get a telephone installed, you have to bribe a minister. And we were astonished by what he said, but it was actually pretty true. So we didn't have a phone. And but Srila Prabhupada felt so concerned that he wanted to go personally to the hospital where Tamal Krishna Goswami had been admitted to stop the operation. So at that time, we had just gotten our own vehicle. It was a Jeep. And yeah, Prabhupada got in the Jeep, and a few of us drove down to the hospital, which was in central Bombay. So we went to the room where Tamal Krishna Goswami was admitted, but it was too late. The operation had already been performed. And they were just wheeling Tamal Krishna Goswami out of the operation theater, and he was just coming to consciousness from the effects of the anesthesia. And when he saw Srila Prabhupada, he told him that he had just been dreaming about him. He had a dream in which Srila Prabhupada was giving a report to the previous acharyas, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Jagannath Das Babaji. And they were inquiring what is the situation on the planet Earth. And Srila Prabhupada was telling them that the people on the planet Earth now have no good qualities. They have no background in pious activities, they have no background in scriptural knowledge, they have no background in Vedic culture. They have all bad qualities. But they do have one good quality, and that is that they have faith in me. And whatever I tell them, they do. And because of that one good quality, they can be delivered. So that was the dream. And Srila Prabhupada sort of smiled in agreement. And we just read the same thing. The only qualification is that one takes shelter of a pure devotee of the Lord who has thorough knowledge in the transcendental science of Krishna. Anyone from any part of the world who becomes well conversant in the science of Krishna becomes a pure devotee and a spiritual master for the general mass of people and may reclaim them by purification of heart. So you can, the whole purport, although Prabhupada is not quoting the verses explicitly, but you can see that Prabhupada is thinking in terms of verses and weaving together the verses in the purport. So now, again, without making any explicit reference to it, he's referring to the verse Kiva Vipra Kiva Nasi Sudra Kenaya Ye Krishna Tattva Veta Se Guru Hai. It doesn't matter if you're a Brahmin or a Sudra or a Grihastha, it doesn't matter what you are. But if you are conversant with the science of Krishna, you can be a guru. And this verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita continues the theme that it doesn't matter what background you come from, even if you were addicted to sinful activities, but if you take shelter of a devotee of the Lord, who's conversant with the science of Krishna and learn the science from him, you in turn can become a guru, a teacher of the transcendental science, and you can also deliver people by teaching them the transcendental science and engaging them in Sankirtan. Though a person be even the most sinful man, he can at once be purified by systematic contact with a pure Vaishnava. A Vaishnava, therefore, can accept a bona fide disciple from any part of the world without any consideration of caste and creed, and promote him by regulative principles to the status of a pure Vaishnava who is transcendental to Brahminical culture. So this is a very important point. By systematic contact with a pure devotee, one can himself become a pure devotee, transcendental even to the position of Brahman in the Varnashram culture. Now this is a very revolutionary position. Of course, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he established the principle. It's all based on Shastra, but he practically implemented the principle that anyone who is not born as a Brahmin can become a Vaishnava. And when one is actually a Vaishnava, he surpasses the Brahminical qualifications. And so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur awarded the sacred thread to devotees not born in Brahmin families, based on the logic that if they're Vaishnavas, they're already more than Brahmins. Brahmins are more than Brahmins. There are people in India, we met them. In Madras, there was one argument in particular that we had with our host. In fact, anyway, that's another thing. Yes, our host in Madras for some time was a Mr. Balu. And it turned out that years later his son moved to Berkeley. But Mr. and Mrs. Balu were like really orthodox Hindus. I mean, really orthodox. In a nice way, it's like Mrs. Balu, she would always take rest after her husband. She would always get up before her husband. She would cook for him and serve him. And only after serving him would she take prasad. And it's quite a cultural experience to stay with them. But he had this idea that, it could have been someone else, that you cannot be a Brahmin unless you're born in a Brahmin family. And that, he was saying, you can be a Vaishnava. And a Vaishnava is more than a Brahmin. But you're not a Brahmin. You have to take birth in a Brahmin family in your next life, and then you can become a Brahmin. So one of... we were a party of four who went to Madras initially. So one of the other devotees said, well, one takes birth in a particular family according to his karma, according to his pious and sinful activities. So if someone has engaged in sinful activities, he may not take birth in a Brahmin family. But by chanting the holy name of the Lord, you can eradicate all the reactions to past sinful activities. Immediately. You don't have to wait to change your body. Now, that was a very strong argument. And he's trying to resist it, but it was sort of hard. And then the devotee said, well, come on, what's stronger, the holy name or a person's sinful reactions? Which is stronger? He had to admit the holy name is stronger. So that means that by kirtan, by taking shelter of the holy name, one can be free from sinful activities without changing the body and transcend the position even of a material Brahmin and be more than a Brahmin, but also a Brahmin. A Vaishnava, therefore, can accept a bona fide disciple from any part of the world without any consideration of caste or creed, and promote him by regulative principles to the status of a pure Vaishnava who is transcendental to Brahminical culture. The system of caste or varnashram dharma is no longer regular even amongst the so-called followers of the system. Nor is it now possible to reestablish the institutional function in the present context of social, political, and economic revolution. So yes, Prabhupada is saying two things here. One is that the following of Brahminical principles is not regular even among people born in Brahmin families. And that we know. That is very clear for the most part. And Prabhupada says that we cannot revive that culture of Varnashram Dharma in the present context of social, political, and economic revolution. People are like revolting against the traditional culture. In 1977, I think Jayaprakash Narayan, he was one of the freedom fighters with Mahatma Gandhi, very popular figure in India. So he held a huge rally with hundreds of thousands of people. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people. And the idea was that the caste Brahmins would come forward and take off their sacred threads and put them in a pile, and then they would set fire to all the sacred threads to sort of show that they're overthrowing the caste system. So they had it, a huge fire, and one after the other they're coming forward and putting their sacred threads in the fire. And do you know what Srila Prabhupada said? He said, good, they're admitting they're not Brahmins. Yes. Nor is it now possible to reestablish the institutional function in the present context of social, political, and economic revolution. Without any reference to the particular custom of a country, one can be accepted to the Vaishnav cult spiritually, and there is no hindrance in the transcendental process. So by the order of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita can be preached all over the world, reclaiming all persons willing to accept the transcendental cult. Such cultural propaganda by the devotees will certainly be accepted by all persons who are reasonable and inquisitive, without any particular bias for the custom of the country. So Prabhupada is such a revolutionary. He's basically calling upon all reasonable and intelligent people to accept the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said, anyone will do it, provided they don't have a bias for their own culture. Yeah, but that is the problem, because people do have a bias for their own culture. It's everywhere. People think they're better than others. It's everywhere. I have some relatives, probably because of my involvement with Krishna consciousness. Now, all of my cousins, one siblings and cousins, one by one, they've all gone to India. And depending on how biased they are, to greater or lesser degrees, they think they're superior. You think they're superior. And But anyway, that's common. Generally, people think they're superior. But such cultural propaganda by the devotees will certainly be accepted by all persons who are reasonable and inquisitive, without any particular bias for the custom of the country. The Vaishnav never accepts another Vaishnav on the basis of birthright, just as he never thinks of the deity of the Lord in a temple as an idol. This is another indirect reference to a verse that says that if you think of a Vaishnav as belonging to a particular caste or community, if you think the deity is made of stone, if you think Ganges water is ordinary water, if you think the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, Narakisaha, you have a hellish mentality. So yeah, I mean, you look at the deity, it looks like stone, but if you think it's stone and not the Lord himself, then that's a hellish mentality. So in the same way, if you think of a Vaishnav, who's also transcendental, is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, if you think of him as belonging to a particular caste or community, it's the same thing. The deity is transcendental. It's not marble or brass or wood. It's Krishna. So similarly, a Vaishnav who's reinstated in his constitutional position as eternal servant of Krishna, he's also not American or Indian or Chinese or German. He's a Vaishnav, servant of Vishnu. And to remove all doubts in this connection, Srila Shukadeva Goswami has invoked the blessings of the Lord who is all-powerful, Prabhavishnave Namaha. He's all-powerful. He can turn matter into spirit. He can turn the deity into, he can turn the stone into a deity. And he can also turn an ordinary person into a Vaishnava, because he's all powerful. As the all powerful Lord accepts the humble service of his devotee in devotional activities of the Archana, his form as the worshipable deity in the temple, similarly, the body of a pure devotee changes transcendentally at once when he gives himself up to the service of the Lord and is trained by a qualified Vaishnava. This was spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami. Dikshakale, at the time of initiation, when one gives oneself up fully to the service of the Lord and is accepted by a Vaishnava, he is accepted as good as the Lord. Not in quantity, of course, but in quality. It's the same principle. It also comes in the Padma Purana that just as ordinary bell metal can be turned into gold by some alchemical process, similarly an ordinary person can be changed into a Brahmin or a Vaishnava by a spiritual initiation. The injunction of Vaishnava regulation in this connection runs as follows. Here he's actually quoting the verse. Archye Vishnu Shiladir Guru Shu Naramatir Vaishnave Jati Budi Sri Vishnu Nami Shabha Samanya Budi, etc. One should not consider the deity of the Lord as worshipped in the temple to be an idol, nor should one consider the authorized spiritual master an ordinary man. Nor should one consider a pure Vaishnav to belong to a particular caste, etc. Padma Purana. The conclusion is that the Lord, being all-powerful, can, under any and every circumstance, accept anyone from any part of the world, either personally or through his bona fide manifestation as the spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya accepted many devotees from communities other than the Varnashramites. Who's an example of a devotee that Lord Chaitanya accepted? Yes, Namacharya Haridas Thakur.
Arti will be in a few minutes. Do you want them to keep the doors closed?
Well, because we started late because of the sound system. But I don't think they should keep the doors closed, but maybe quiet.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, because we need a little more time.
Okay.
Lord Chaitanya accepted many devotees from communities other than the Varnashramites, and he himself declared to teach us that he does not belong to any caste or social order of life, but that he is the eternal servant of the Lord who maintains the damsels of Vrindavan, Lord Krishna. Gopi Naham Vipan Jai Shishi Gorni Tai Ti Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Ki Jai. Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Nithai Gaur Premanandi. Yes. So Lord Chaitanya, to show the example, said, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Sudra. I'm not a brahmachari, I'm not a grihastha, I'm not a vanaprastha, I'm not a sannyasi. Then what are you? Gopi bhartu padakamalai or dasi dasanta. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the maintainer of the damsels of Vrindavan. That is the way of self-realization. Now, to conclude, I thought to read a few verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita that give an indication of the stature or the value or the significance of someone who can actually do this. I mean, yes, it was there in Srimad Bhagavatam. But until Srila Prabhupada left India and traveled all over the world, it was not done outside of India. Now, I will read some very interesting verses about the Chaitanya tree. Now, I hope you all are reading Srila Prabhupada's books. I mean, he hardly slept at night, staying up to translate the books for us. We should read them. This is Shastra. So, In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a description of the Chaitanya tree. How many of you have read some of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita? Raise your hand if you've read at least some. Okay. How many of you have read the entire book? Okay. Room for improvement. A good beginning, but room for improvement. So this comes in the Adi Lila, and it's a very interesting metaphor, because the tree is Lord Chaitanya, and the gardener who is tending the tree is also Lord Chaitanya. And this tree, like any tree, there's roots, and then a trunk, and then limbs, branches, twigs, leaves, and so on. So, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, describes the different branches of the Chaitanya tree. And I'm going to read what branch he describes as Sarvottama, the best of all. Did anyone take note which branch is Sarvottama, the best of all? Rupen Sanatan Goswami. So, this is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, Chapter 10, The Branches of the Chaitanya Tree. Text 84. Anupama Vallabh Sri Rupa Sanatana Etina Saka Vikshera Paschimi Sarvottama. On the western side were the 43rd, 44th, and 45th branch. Sri Sanatan, Sri Rupa, and Anupam. They were the best of all. Among these branches, Rupa and Sanatan were principal. Anupam, Jiva Goswami, and others, headed by Rajendra, were their sub-branches. By the will of the Supreme Gardener. Now, the parallel is quite clear, but just keep that in mind, that the could say resemblance between what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says about Rupa and Sanatan and what we know to have been true of Srila Prabhupada. By the will of the Supreme Gardener, the branches of Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami grew many times over, expanding throughout the western countries and covering the entire region. Now, western countries is Paschima Desh. Now, in the context, I think western countries would mean Maharashtra, Sindh, those western countries. And so it was significant that Rupa and Sanatan were able to spread Krishna consciousness in the Paschim Desh, in the western countries, and the number of devotees multiplied. Because it is said that as you go west from Bengal, from Mayapur, from Bengal, people become more and more degraded. So Rupa and Sanatana are glorified because they spread Krishna consciousness in the Western countries of Bharat. But what to speak of West? I mean, Europe, America, across the ocean, China. Extending to the borders of the river Sindhu and the Himalayan mountain valleys, these two branches expanded throughout India, including all the places of pilgrimage such as Vrindavan, Mathura, and Haridwar. The fruits of love of Godhead which fructified on these two branches were distributed in abundance. Tasting these fruits, everyone became mad after them. Text 89. Paschimera loka sabha muda anachara tahan pracharila donhe bhakti sadachara. The people in general on the western side of India were neither intelligent nor well behaved. The western side of India, or to speak of the western hemisphere. But by the influence of Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were trained in devotional service and good behavior. When Srila Prabhupada first returned to India and came to Bombay, there is a big sadhu sammelan, a gathering of sadhus on Chaupati Beach. And so many Mayavadis were assembled on the stage. So many, you know, chairs and then thousands of people in the audience. And, you know, there were a lot of sort of long-winded, impersonal, you know, dry, speculative discourses. And then finally, Srila Prabhupada was asked to speak. He only spoke for a few minutes. And basically he said that by the chanting of the holy name, these young men and women had completely changed their habits. He used the same word that's used in this verse, sadachar, good behavior. So they had completely changed their habits. They used to be meat eaters, drinkers, womanizers, and gamblers and whatnot. But by the influence of the holy names of the Lord, they had given up eating meat, fish, or eggs, even onions and garlic, taking all kinds of intoxicants, including coffee and tea, and illicit sex and gambling, which Prabhupada said is very rare even in India. Very rare even in India. But by the influence of the holy name, they had done it. So that is mentioned here. By the influence of Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were trained in devotional service and good behavior. Sadachara. So, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although it is not only in Western India that people were contaminated by association with Muslims, it is a fact that the farther west one goes in India, the more he will find the people to be fallen from the Vedic culture. And then he mentions that people were influenced by non-Vedic culture and they lost sight of how to behave in connection with devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami very kindly preached the bhakti cult in Western India. And following in their footsteps, the propagators of the Chaitanya cult in the Western countries are spreading the Sankirtan movement and inculcating the principles of Vaishnava behavior, thus purifying and reforming many people who were previously accustomed to the culture of mlechas and yavanas. All of our devotees in the Western countries give up their old habits of illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. Of course, 500 years ago, these practices were unknown in India, at least in Eastern India. But unfortunately, at present, all of India has been victimized by these non-Vedic principles, which are sometimes even supported by the government. You come back, you know, if the government were in the hands of devotees, the situation would be different. So, now it may strike us that Srila Prabhupada is stating very boldly that his disciples have given up all these sinful activities, which is true. But they were able to do so because yes, they had taken shelter of pure devotees and engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord. So if we maintain that position of following the instructions of the pure devotee and chanting the holy names, we'll have the strength to resist the force of bad habits or resist the false propaganda of false leaders. It's not automatic. But if we make a conscious, deliberate effort to maintain that shelter of the pure devotees and the holy name, then Maya will not be able to touch us. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andhakara. Krishna is like light, Maya is like darkness. Where there is the sun of Krishna, there can be no darkness of Maya. And so we should always chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So are there any questions or comments? Okay.
I would like to say something. When Krishna went to visit his devotee Pundarik, Pundarik was serving his parents, like massaging their feet. And he said to Krishna, as soon as I am done serving my parents, I am all yours. Meanwhile, you stand on these bricks. That's all he had to offer. No chairs in the house. So Krishna, pleased by his service, stood on bricks, waited for him to finish his service. This story is immortalized in Pandharpur, India, with statues of Krishna and Rukmini both standing on bricks. Krishna in this form was worshipped for several hundred years, and then when we were under Muslim rule, Saint Ramdas said to Krishna, how long are you going to stand on bricks? And he started worshipping Prabhu Ramchandra. In any picture of Ramchandra, you know, he always has bow and arrow. And a student of Sri Ramda, King Shivaji, was the single person because of whom Maharashtra did not fall prey to Islam. And then when Sri Ramda went to visit Krishna temple in Pandharpur, before he could touch feet of Krishna, Krishna changed himself to Prabhu Ramchandra, Rukmini to Sita, and they greeted Saint Ramda. So there are like other forms of Krishna worship, and Krishna seems to appreciate that. And at this age, maybe we need more than Sankirtan if we consider the present state of India. Thank you.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Damodar Prasad.
No. Can I ask one question?
Yeah, okay.
Quick question. First time I heard that Rupa Goswami is traveling outside of Vrindavan, because normally we hear Mahaprabhu gave him and Sanatana Goswami also the instruction to stay in Vrindavan and revive the lost places of pilgrimage, build temples, especially to write literatures. And the only understanding that I had of their influence outside of Braj, immediate with the Vaishnavas coming to visit there, was that when Srinivasacharya Prabhu took the books of the Goswamis east into Bengal and Orissa and other parts of eastern India, but I never heard this mentioned before of how they traveled out of Vrindavan to the west. Is this, could we understand that this means that Vaishnavas were visiting from the west and they became influenced, or did they actually leave Vrindavan?
It's a good question. It could be that, or it could be that they sent their followers. Like Prabhupada, he went to many places, but he didn't go everywhere, but he sent his followers. It's a good point. Good point. We need to do more research. Very intelligent question.
Thank you very much for coming, Maharaj, and enlightening us. I'm very grateful for you being here. I have to admit that I have a little doubt about the subject. I'd like to share it with you so you can dispel it. Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu has described that karma comes in four different ways. And that's the desires for simple activities and the seed in the heart, and then the impressions of simple activities, and then the manifest and unmanifest reactions. And it's understood that bhakti can immediately get rid of the simple desires and the impressions and the unmanifest reactions. But the manifest reactions in the form of our psychophysiological nature remains, because we don't, our body does not disappear by chanting Hare Krishna. And because of our psychophysiological nature, it's often found that even despite chanting the holy name for many years, it's difficult to follow the line of Shram Karma very perfectly. I'm a little confused about the importance of Varna Shram Karma and how we can be considered Vaishnavas. Because many times Srila Prabhupada will express the importance of Varna Shram and explain all the principles, but will conclude that it's very difficult to follow, and therefore Hadirnam, 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 they were able to just chant. On the other hand, also Lord Chaitanya has been very strict with Shraddha Haridas and rejecting him for not following his Varna Shram. So my questions are, can we be considered Vaishnavas or pure Vaishnavas even if we can't follow Varna Shram Dharma very strictly? And how important is Varna Shram Dharma for us?
Well, Anya Vilasita Sunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam, pure devotional service is beyond karma. So if one is on that platform, That's the goal. That's the goal. The idea of Varnashram Dharma is to have some sort of social stability in the culture, so people are not too disturbed. And because if they're too disturbed, then it's harder to practice Krishna consciousness. But you know those verses in the third canto, Aho Bhata Sapacho Garyan. Even someone born in a family of dog eaters, he at once becomes eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices by taking the holy name of the Lord. So that means he doesn't have to wait to take birth again as a Brahmin, but he's immediately eligible. And it's understood that he's done all those other types of performances already, just because he's chanting the holy name. So, yeah, I mean.
So, what would be the qualities of the holy name is that make it possible? I mean, not just because someone is chanting the holy name, but the quality of it.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada says that, for example, the scripture says that by chanting the holy name, one can destroy the reactions to more sins than he can commit. Srila Prabhupada says there's not the least exaggeration in such statements, but it depends on the quality of the utterance. Yeah.
Karupta karma and uprubta karma, like he's talking about, can both be destroyed by Sudanam. But, you know, you have nama parad, nama bhasa, and Sudanam. So, as he's saying, according to the quality of the chanting, then the karma, what karma may be destroyed?
How is the
parupta
karma destroyed?
Well, you have to reconcile, because the material body, if you consider the material body a product of the karma, it may be so, but the devotee also transforms everything that's material to a certain state of purity from material to spiritual. So, can you call the body, as Maharaj is saying, of a Vaishnava material when the Vaishnava becomes a Sudha Vaishnava?
Yeah. In the definition of Bhava Bhakti, Shuddha Sattva Visheshatma, that at the stage of Bhava Bhakti, one's body is infused with Shuddha Sattva, and so it's considered no longer to act materially, but it, spiritually, like the example of iron and fire. And yes, it is a matter of quality, but according to the discussion with Haridas Thakur in the assembly of Govardhan Mazumdar and Hiranya Mazumdar, by Nama Bhas, just by a glimpse of pure chanting, one is freed from sinful reactions and is liberated. And the but what one gets from Shudanam, which is the real goal of chanting, is Krishna prema. But even Nama Bhas can free one from sinful reactions.
So that's the case of Ajamil.
Exactly. Ajamil was liberated from sinful reactions, and he was liberated from material desires because he was so attached to his wife, so attached to his son Narayan. But after the association of the Vishnu Dutas and chanting the in Nama Bhas, he could leave it all. So that means that he was liberated from material desires, but he hadn't developed Krishna prema. So he had to go to Haridwar and do more sadhana. And then when he came to that stage of Shudanam, then the Vishnu Dutas came and took him to Vaikuntha. Perfect example. Yes, Vaikunthanath Prabhu.
Could you tell us a few words about your new book?
Oh. Okay. Let me see. I think there's something relevant here. In the preceding chapter, 9. Well, anyway, we're short of time. But yes, my new book is called Many Moons. And the idea is, you know, as Prabhupada said, that he was always, he wasn't interested in thousands of stars twinkling, but he wanted one moon, because one moon can illuminate the darkness of night, which thousands of stars cannot do. So, yeah, he said he didn't want thousands of cheap disciples, he just wanted one moon. And so that was a question, whether he would get one moon. And then in one talk, yeah, he said he was wondering whether he would get that one moon. But by Krishna's grace, so many moonlight boys and girls have come. And then he said many moons. So this book is about 9 of Srila Prabhupada's followers who have left us, left this world. 6 are direct disciples of Prabhupada and 3 are grand disciples. And I found the stories, well, I knew them all. It's not, I mean, there's 9 here, but there's so many others. But these were 9 who I had a personal relationship with. And yeah, it was very... Yes. In order, well, I think there's some cold air coming in. Anyway. Maybe we should offer obeisance to this. Jai Jagannath, Mahadev, Sivadra, Kirjai. Jai Shunti, Arago, Kulananda, Kirjai. So first, Jayananda Prabhu from San Francisco, then Gaur Govinda Swami, Gaur Govinda Swami, Kamal Krishna Goswami, Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami first met devotees in Berkeley. Although he's originating from Canada, he first met devotees in Berkeley. He was a very strongly built person. And at that time he had very long flowing hair. And he met the devotees of, I don't know if it was Telegraph Avenue, but they had a book table. And some devotees were chanting. So he came up, was looking at the book table, and he saw a poster of Krishna. So he said, who's that? And the devotee said, that's God. No, that's God. And what would you do if I tore up that picture of God? And the devotee replied, I think I'd have to kill you. And Sridhar Swami was very impressed. He probably thought, I can fit in here. These are the type of people I can fit in with. And so Sridhar Swami, then Bhakti Tirtha Swami, Bhakti Srup Damodar Swami, and then grand disciples, Archivigraha Dasi, she's from South Africa, Abhiram Thakur. Not many devotees know about him. He actually joined in Karachi, but it was very hard just for Hindus to survive in Karachi. So he somehow was able to get out, and then he went to Pune, and then he ended up in Bombay, staying at the Chaupati Temple. And then Kirtida Devi Dasi. She's also from South Africa. And she met Tamal Krishna Goswami, and she's a wonderful devotee. She left her body in Dallas. So, yeah, it's very instructive. And one thing, I mean, so many things struck me, but one thing that struck me was how, towards the end, Krishna, like, he sort of helped these devotees to be ready to leave their bodies in Krishna consciousness. There's like a bit of trial and error. We all experience that. There's like a bit of trial and error. It's wonderful to see how Krishna helped these devotees prepare themselves. Just two days ago, one of my godbrothers was visiting me in Santa Barbara, and I mean, he said he made the mistake of beginning to read the book at night, and he stayed up late, he couldn't put it down. And then the next morning he spoke to me about it, and one thing he said was that it really makes you think how many other wonderful devotees there are that we're not aware of. Even the devotees in the book, like he just happened to choose Sridhar Swami to read about them. And he found out so much about him that he didn't know before. He's saying that there may be so many wonderful devotees amongst us that we take for granted, we don't even know who they are. I also like it because it shows that, well, it's like that verse, akama sarva kama ba moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena, that whether one has no desires or is full of material desires or is desirous of liberation, if he takes to bhakti yoga, tivrena bhakti yogena, with intensity, one can achieve the supreme destination. So these devotees are really very different as individuals. They're all like really different. But some, like Gaura Govinda Swami, Bhakti Sri Damodar Swami. They came from very pious backgrounds. Very pious backgrounds. And others not so pious. But by giving themselves wholeheartedly to the process, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, really that intensity, serving Srila Prabhupada with intensity, giving themselves to the mission with intensity, chanting the holy names with intensity, they became very exalted. So that was another thing. There's no like, you don't have to like fulfill a particular role or image. You can just sort of be yourself, but give yourself fully to Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Because each one is so different. It's really different. So it's not that you have to become whatever, a great scholar, a great kirtan leader, a great manager. But whatever you can do, just put your all into it for Krishna. And that will burn up all the sinful reactions, and that will purify your heart. And in a sense, I would say, enable you to think of Krishna. But it also, like, it brings you a lot of mercy, which helps you to think of Krishna. And that mercy, yeah, it also often comes in the association that Krishna sends, especially at the end. Although, you know, some of them died suddenly. Tamal Krishna Goswami, Bhakti Sri Damodar Swami. But I mean, they were fixed Krishna, and others, that sort of long, painful ordeal of illness helped them prepare themselves. In fact, it was that the pain was an impetus to intensely focusing on Krishna. Because as soon as they relax, the pain was there. So that was a way that Krishna helped them through the pain.
Do you have any favorite ones? I mean, what's your
favorite? You're my favorite. No, I can't say that I do. I mean, each one is, I relished each and every one. It was very purifying for me and enlivening for me. But I did a lot of interviews, so some are just from me, but some are interviews with, like for Jayananda Prabhu, Gunagrahi Maharaj, he heard I was writing the book, and he said that when Jayananda Prabhu left, he never got a chance to speak about him. So I interviewed him. And then there's some interviews of people who are like very close to these devotees, especially at the end. Those were very, very interesting and revealing. So for Sridhar Swami, it was his disciple Mayapur Das. He like served him personally. For Bhakti Tirtha Swami, it was a husband and wife who took care of him the last year, Ekavira and Vraja Lila. And with Tamal Krishna Goswami, there were two. One, Ritukvija Swami. I don't know if you know him. Very, very nice devotee. And Tamal Krishna Goswami's brother, Karl Herzig, who's become a devotee. Yeah. And they give very intimate, very revealing.
I've never heard about them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're, yeah. I do. We have a book table outside. Thank you.
What inspired you to choose these particular nine as opposed to so many Vaishnavas have left?
Yeah. Well, they were ones who I had spoken about. It wasn't in my mind to do a book. I just spoke about them, and then I sort of got an internal impetus to put it together as a book. And they were just people that I. Who had touched me and who I had some relationship with. Before the book, I mean, the book was basically finished when Iendra Prabhu left. So I, without disturbing the pages, I somehow got, I don't know what I cut, I juggled it a little, so there's one page, just a little one page about him. If I could, but I mean, people, this is so purifying to glorify Vaishnava. It really means glorifying Prabhupada and our parampara and Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And yeah, Yamuna Devi. I thought I should write about her. I mean, that was after this. But her longtime friend and associate, Dina Tarine, is doing something. So I'm sending her material. And actually, Dina Tarine asked me that if I'm traveling and if anybody happens to have any remembrances of Yamuna Devi, they can tell me. Your sister had some very sweet exchanges, so I sent that to Dina Tarine for the book.
She already gave me for proofreading. She gave me for proofreading.
What, her story?
Her story, yes.
Yeah.
Is it your first book?
No, it's my second. The first is called Watering the Seed. Yeah. And there's a third. I mean, there will be more. I mean, Prabhupada told me to write, so. But yeah, there's a third. It's the basic text is ready. That one is called Life's Final Exam. Death and Dying in the Vedic Tradition. That one could be of interest to a more diverse type of audience, because death and dying is really something that everyone has to deal with sooner or later. Yeah, and Mother Archavigraha, she had the desire that she left her body in Vrindavan, and she had the desire that others should have the same facility like she had. And she asked me, like one of her last requests, she asked me to do that. And Bhakti Bringa Govinda Swami, He was like her next door neighbor. He did a lot for her. He was like a Shiksha guru for her. So he and I thought, yes, we must do this. We must fulfill this desire. It would be a wonderful service to the Vaishnavas to have a place in Vrindavan where they can leave their bodies. And that opened two years ago about. Not two, but almost two. So, yeah. So I guess, yeah. And in the field of death and dying, we have, you could say, a natural advantage, because from the very beginning we're preparing for the time of death. Most people, they try to avoid thinking of death. But from the whole Bhagavatam, what is the duty of a person about to die? And it's full of stories of people leaving their bodies. Even Bharat Maharaj, although it's sort of an example of what you shouldn't do, but it's also about the time of death. So many stories about devotees. Ajamil, just one after the other, one after the other. So it's that. I don't think any one, I mean in any other tradition, has as much, you know, real scientific knowledge or solid information about death and preparing for the next life than we do. So, yeah.
Buddhists, they talk a lot about that.
Sorry?
Buddhists, they also mention a lot about that.
Yeah, but they don't have a clear idea of the eternality of the soul. Mm-hmm. And they don't talk about God or going to serve God in an eternal spiritual form, in an eternal spiritual planet. They talk about it, but it's sort of...
It's not so complete.
Yes. Yeah. Like Prabhupada said, when it comes to the material world, we agree with the Buddhists, or the Buddhists agree with us, but they don't go beyond the material world. They just come to like the borderline. But they don't know about the spiritual reality beyond the material world. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're saying they don't go beyond Nirvana.
Yeah. Yeah, they're stuck in Nirvana. Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, another question. First, I'd just like to mention you're looking very saintly and beautiful here in this assembly. About your book, I'm very pleased to hear how you're glorifying devotees in your movement today. And I'm trying to grip my own heart of attitude of cynicism towards devotees, where I have from Vipu Prabhupada, I'm very cynical with devotees. And so I was wondering if you could please enlighten me how I can recognize a genuine devotee.
Well, I think that, I mean, you know, the Chaitanya Charitamrita Rupa, that anyone who chants the holy name of Krishna once is a devotee. So, I think that the question, like how to recognize a genuine devotee, I think the question should be how...
I could say an unpretentious devotee?
Well, I think the question is how to purify one's heart so that one can appreciate a devotee.
Yes.
That's the real question. Because our... in one sense, our real advancement comes from the quality of our chanting. And yes, we have an arthas, but if we chant intensely, the anarthas just go away by the mercy of the holy name. But if we could commit offenses, especially Vaishnava aparad, that is a major obstacle in getting the mercy of the holy name. So when you become more serious about chanting, and when you realize how harmful it is to your chanting, to, we're not even talking about like blaspheming or just having thoughts, negative thoughts. When you realize how harmful that is, you just want to give it up. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. And then it's very easy. There's devotees everywhere. I mean, maybe on the street. Even then. So, yeah, I think that's also, especially the three grand disciples, they were not, quote, big devotees. In fact, many people didn't realize how great they were until towards the end. They were very, very, they were not, quote, big devotees. Quote. They're humble servants.
That's a good point, because a materialistic devotee, Parker Bhakti, like myself, tends to see things from a material point of view and see that this person was a sannyasi and this person has a big position. And, I worry that I might make offenses by not recognizing someone who might have a more humble position, but is actually a very pure heart and intention. So that was my question, how I can recognize an advanced devotee and properly honor them.
Yeah. It came up in the story of Ekavira and Vrajalila about Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Because Bhakti Tirtha Swami would, sometimes he would get letters from Burijan Prabhu. They're like really potent letters. And I don't think Ekavira and Vrajalila really knew him, but they were getting letters from him, which they were reading to Bhakti Tirtha Swami. And they were amazed by how insightful and penetrating and shastric they were. And I think maybe Vrajalila said like wow, you know. And sort of like he was getting on to some things that even some like sannyasis were not. And Bhakti Tirtha Swami said, yes, there are householders in this movement who are as advanced as sannyasis. You can't judge by that. And at the end, because of that, because of reading those letters to her Guru Maharaj, and also at the end, Bhakti Tirtha Swami wanted his disciples to take shelter of Prabhupada's books. So after he left, first thing they did is they went to India and they studied scripture with Burijan Prabhu. And that really helped them after that loss, tremendous loss.
Can I just add something? I'm not very knowledgeable, but I used to wonder about this, that how are some devotees, they say something, but that's not really intentionally mean, but it is interpreted in a way, stuff like that. And the answer, I thought about it, and thankfully Krishna guided me, and the answer came was that...
What was the question?
No question, I was just adding to your question.
Oh.
And I started
with that question.
I'm not really knowledgeable, like that, but I had a similar thing. And I used to wonder that, why would devotees have conflict in them? And then to answer that came, like, thank you, Krishna, even with, we all are struggling at our own level, and we carry the karmas or sanskars from our previous life that that say if anger is my issue, and for my previous birth I was always angry. I'm sorry, I don't want to add because I'm more knowledgeable than you, but it's just that it was one of the questions I had, and I had prayed to Krishna that why do devotees get conflict, or I mean it's not reasonable, and if we all have single goal to go to Supreme Godhead, then why does that happen? So that's the kind of answer I got, is that it is because of our previous karma that we carry. And so chanting and having faith in Krishna helps us overcome that. So what we have to do at our level is see every devotee beyond that, that see beyond it, that anything they say or anything that is active, we have to see beyond that. So like good quality, see beyond material. That's all. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. This, in Sri Harinam Chintamani, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur analyzes the 10 offenses. So the first is sadhu ninda. And so then to properly recognize sadhu ninda, one has to be able to recognize a sadhu or devotee. And there are 26 qualities of a devotee, but one of them, Krishnaika Sharanam, having taken exclusive shelter of Krishna, that defines a devotee. If he has that quality or qualification, but not the other 25, he's still considered a Vaishnava. And to criticize him because he doesn't have some of the other 25 is an offense. That's sadhu ninda. And even if someone has all the other 25, but he doesn't have the qualification of Krishnaika Sharanam, the other good qualities don't have that much value. So that's really what defines a sadhu or devotee. It's the same thing, api chet sudaracharo bhakti abhamanam. Even if someone is engaged in abominable act, but if he's rightly situated, that means that Krishnaika Sharanam, he's sadhu eva samantavya, he's considered a sadhu. And so, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that to criticize a Vaishnav because he doesn't have all the other qualities, or because of past sinful activities, or even traces of sinful activities in the present, or a low birth, these are not legitimate grounds for criticizing a sadhu. And so if one criticizes a sadhu for those reasons, that's sadhu ninda, an offense against the holy name.
How can we guard other people
in
our presence?
Yeah, I think maybe we should move to the next room.
Okay.
They're all very good questions, very good questions. We definitely should not hear other people blaspheme, because that's also an offense. But how to avoid it tactfully, that's a sort of an art. Sorry?
You have to avoid completely the criticism of the devotee, just walk away from there. You know, there's everything.
Well, the thing, no, it's touchy because if you leave a conversation abruptly, the devotee who's criticizing or the group of devotees who are criticizing, they might take offense. They might feel hurt or they might get upset. So, the best thing is to change the subject. And to change the subject, you don't have to say, I don't want to listen to the criticism. Because they may not like it. It depends on who they are and what your relationship. But you could just say, whatever, I was just about to do kirtan in the temple, so if you want, you can come with me. We can all do kirtan together. It's not like you're rejecting them, but you're just, you want their association, but just in a different context. Or I still have to finish my rounds, like Haridas Thakur and the prostitute. I still have to finish my rounds. I'd love to chant japa with you if you want to keep me company, but I have to finish my rounds. Or, you know, I have a certain quota that I have to read every day. I still have my quota. If you'd like to read with me, I'd be very happy. We can read together. But I have to do this. So it's not like you're rejecting them or rejecting their association per se, but you're welcoming their association, but in a different context of chanting and hearing about Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Vitai Gaura Premanandi. Hare Krishna.